Welcome. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Lynn Woodland, who is the author of Making Miracles, Create New Realities for Your Life and Our World. Lynn is an award-winning author, international teacher, and human potential expert with a long 35-year-plus history of doing this work. And today we're going to talk to her about the nuts and bolts of creating miracles. Welcome, Lynn.
Thank you.
It was a miracle getting us on today, wasn't it? Anyway, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We can start off by having you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you got into this line of work. And from reading your book, it appears that you have studied the Course in Miracles. Is that true?
I did many years ago. Yeah, this line of work, I've found it when I was still in my teens. In a strange sort of way, I've always been very interested in metaphysics and spiritual pursuits. All of my jobs in life have been in some field of spiritual education or counseling. It actually was, and that goes back to 1972, it actually wasn't until the early 80s that I really started thinking in terms of miracles. And that was when I got very excited about the work of Jerry Jampolsky, who made a mm-hmm. big splash in the 80s on the Phil Donahue show with a group of kids he had been working with at his center, practicing these lovely principles of attitudinal healing, he called them, which he drew from A Course in Miracles. And essentially, mm-hmm. attitudinal healing is reframing the whole healing experience as healing is this letting go of fear and being in the moment and extending love. And he was seeing incredible healing miracles happening with these kids who were not expected to live, were going into remission from very serious diseases. And I got very excited about what he was doing and started studying A Course in Miracles with a group of colleagues. We had a transpersonal counseling center at the time, a mental health center with a spiritual slant. And we wound up setting up a Center for Attitudinal Healing in Baltimore modeled after Jerry Jampolsky's. And we saw the same kind of miracles happen with our kids and with adults. And then the volunteers who weren't dealing with any kind of illness, but they were practicing attitudinal healing as well, started seeing all kinds of wonderful miracles happen in their own lives. And it just made me want to just look more deeply into what gives rise to miraculous experience. And I've pursued that ever since.
I suspect that working with children, especially with the techniques you've described in the book and are described pretty well in The Course in Miracles as well, if children are able to maintain a childlike attitude toward the world, they haven't set things in stone so much, and they probably can use their imagination to a greater degree than many adults can. And these are the components that you outline in your book as kind of the stepping stones toward the creation of miracles. Your ability to go from a particle to a wave-like in your imagination mm-hmm. to enter this realm where miracles are possible.
Yeah, well, that's true. The kids just take to this stuff like ducks to water. It's
right.
Often easier working with kids than adults. We get very fixed in our ways of seeing the world.
So I imagine that a lot of the early work on visualization was done with children. Bernie Siegel's work. And then extended to adults, but children having a more developed imagination or a less restricted imagination do well with this. And so you know, the line in the Bible that refers to you must become as little children prior to entering the kingdom of heaven takes on a little bit different meaning. It might be that you need to have the mind that is unfettered with, you know, lack of possibilities to enter the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. A lot of New Thought teachings suggest that you have to change your beliefs in order to change your reality and to see life circumstances shifting. And I truly have not found that to be necessary. And beliefs certainly are important things, and they do affect our experience. And yet, in my experience, really all we have to do is be able to imagine, to just suspend disbelief for just a little bit in order to imagine mm-hmm. something. In fact, I often give people the instruction in my workshops to imagine your highest heart's desire, and then I have people imagine what would feel too impossibly good to happen, something that's so good you know it's impossible. Because I actually,
right.
I started doing that after watching a woman manifest her two most impossible things within about 12 hours of just imagining.
Mm-hmm.
And she was floored. We all were, actually. One of them was a very dramatic physical healing. She'd been in chronic pain from a car accident for a decade and had to walk with canes and braces. And before we'd even done any real hands-on experiential healing work in the workshop, she came in without using her canes, without braces. She did a little dance for us, saying that she was pain-free for the first time since her injury. And you know, if you think of what happens when we imagine something, we, even if we're telling ourselves it's impossible, our mind and our heart still goes there. We put ourselves in it, and in fact, when we tell ourselves it's impossible, we put aside that part of us that says, can this happen? Oh, I don't think so. Oh, that debate that goes on, and that place of attachment of, oh, I really want this to happen, because we've already written it off as impossible. So, So just being willing to imagine without a lot of the constricting elements of attachment and doubt and worry and fear, that's really powerfully creative. And I think you're right. I think kids are excellent at that.
So I imagine you have your workshops and your schedule up on your website. Is that right?
Yeah.
Would you like to give your website information in case anybody wants to
absolutely
take a look at that while we're doing the rest of the interview?
It's lynnwoodland.com, and that's LynnWoodland.com.
Great. So you start off in your book with some examples of people being able to manifest, say, things that were lost or things that were something that you that you imagine in your hand, something tangible. Starting off with manifestation of some small object. It could be something that was lost. It could be something that was that you just want. Would you like to go through that a little bit and tell people how that exercise goes?
Well, that's actually an exercise I do as just a little light practice exercise so that people see how powerful their consciousness is. And essentially, it's just to imagine something in the palm of your hand and make it very real and see it, feel it, taste it, imagine rolling it from hand to hand, feel the weight of it, the temperature of it, and then let it go and see how long it takes to find you. And people have very interesting experiences with this, often manifesting their object before we even leave the room. And it's good to know that we can do that. It I think that miracle making, what I think of as miracle making, is not the same as manifesting work that is taught in all the popular books, you know, The Secret, all that kind of thing, The Law of Attraction. I think of miracle making as something a little bit different. It's something more mm-hmm. rooted in love. But those techniques, I think, are really helpful in that they show us the connection that our consciousness really does have, the impact that our consciousness, our mind has on the reality that shows up. So, yeah, that's so Bob, a little fun exercise I do in my workshop sometimes, just to get people excited about the power of their own consciousness.
Sai Baba once taught that if you want to create something, say in your hand like that, all you have to do is concentrate on it for 33 seconds. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that's always necessary. You might want to comment on your experience on that. Do you think it's the length of time, or do you think it's the intensity or the clarity? What do you think separates success from non-success in this exercise?
Well, I think a lot of it is the extent to which we can get out of our own way. Because there's actually some interesting research. There's a research team, Brenda Dunn and Robert John, who have done decades of work with random event generators and really measuring the effect that mental attention has on affecting these random patternings. And they've proven, really beyond a shadow of a doubt, that mental intention alone can move matter, can affect the mm-hmm. physical plane. They also have shown this very interesting effect that sometimes the random events will move in the opposite direction of the operator's intent to a significant degree. Mm-hmm. And what I believe about that is that when we get too focused, when we take these techniques and we get really focused and we strain our brain and we just, I'm going to focus and focus and focus till I make this happen, what happens is that we start to tap into some of the subconscious level of doubt and fears and some of our limiting expectancies about life that says, oh, this can't happen to me, or I don't deserve it, or everybody else has miracles but not me. And we actually repel the object of our desire. And I think this is why a lot of law of attraction techniques don't work as predictably as they're promised. And so, you know, I've never studied how many seconds it takes. I personally believe that there's an element of lightness that needs to surround the process, an element of lightness and a lack of attachment. You know, ultimately, I think that the way we tap into our highest good, and personally, I'm not that much of a teacher of manifesting techniques. I think miracle making is something a little different and a little bit more exciting. But if we are going to talk about manifesting, I think that there's an element of lightness that has to surround the process, where we take it lightly, we do it playfully. We let go of that part that's about, oh, is this going to work? Is it going to work? Because the minute we go from, oh, wouldn't it be lovely if, to, what if it doesn't happen, we've shifted from the energy of love to the energy of fear. When we're in that expansive excitement, that really has an element of love to it. As soon as we go into, when's it going to happen? It's not going to happen. Is it going to happen? We've closed down that expansive energy of love and really shifted into fear, which has the opposite effect of love. Just as love is very magnetic to our highest good, fear tends to push it away.
Yeah, I think those of us who are long-term meditators know when we're in the state of being in unconditional love and openness, because there's an energy flow. You know, you can feel the energy flowing out, especially through your heart chakra. So it's real clear that you're in that state when you're in it, if you meditate. And then once you start doubt, worry, and what if, that closes down. I mean, you feel mm-hmm. that closed down. So I think that that, you probably can feel being in that state once you've been in it, you know, intentionally through meditation.
Yeah.
The other thing I've found in instant manifestation techniques, or very quick manifestation, is that if you have a powerful emotion of desire, like pushing out, and I think that we see this when, say, a child is trapped under a car and the mother lifts the car up mm-hmm. and gets a kid out, you know, whenever there's a powerful desire coming forth, then miracles come quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this happen as well?
Well, I've never seen a mother pick up a car, but yeah, absolutely.
Or some
urgent you know, I think our
miracle,
passion,
like,
I've seen all kinds of miraculous healings, and I think that our, a strong desire, especially when we don't have, you know, sometimes I think that miracles slide in when we lose our minds for a moment. And if you think of what happens
right.
in that extreme
you're not thinking about a miracle,
of a,
you're just
of a
thinking
mother,
about, I don't want this to happen, or I want this to happen. You know,
I'm sorry, say again?
Oh, I was just saying it's a strong desire. Either I want this to happen or I don't want this to happen, you know, in case of if a child's in danger. You know, it's just a strong desire to change physical reality. And
right, and I think sometimes that desire can overcome our some of our limiting beliefs that are more at the level of our lower mind. In the example
right.
you gave of the mother who sees her child in danger, she doesn't have time to think. The emotion is so strong that
there's very little
she
thinking
her mind and taps into love and
strong emotion.
Yeah.
But I think emotion is very creative. Even negative emotions create pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, a strong emotion will create, irregardless of whether it's positive or negative. I guess you could make the argument that positive emotions create more in the positive, and they probably do. But so that's another element in the creation process is the fuel of what emotion brings to it. So I guess that would come under desire in your book, you know, putting the desire out there.
Yeah. I mean, I teach a lot about emotions. I sometimes hate to even call emotion as positive or negative, because then it's people are inclined to want to repress a whole dimension of their emotional experience, which in my experience, when we have an emotion and we call it negative and we repress it, it just stays in the body as kind of a toxic residue. So
it's not good for your health to do that, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a way that we can, if we change our thoughts around our emotional experience and release the emotion, then emotion just turns into energy. So, for example, if we're feeling angry, we might have a thought about that anger, that life isn't fair and this always happens to me and how dare they, but the actual feeling of it is just that big energy in our gut and in our body. It wants to just push out and scream out. And that actually, if we allow it some expression, you know, if when we're feeling road rage, instead of in our minds attacking the other driver and doing something crazy in response, if we simply just feel it in our body and just give a big, and release
it. Let it out.
it actually turns into energy. We'll just feel it through our whole body. So I'm disinclined to judge emotion, because I think it all turns into energy of one sort or another.
Well, that's why I think it is can be appreciated anyway, that in the process of manifestation anyway. I don't know about the miracles that you're, the exercise you're doing doesn't seem to make use of the emotion so much other than through desire. But a strong emotion coming up can create. It's just an observation that it can create very quickly.
Really my work is not about manifesting. It's about love. And
right.
I believe that love is that limitless source that we tap into for our highest good. And manifesting is about setting an intention really from the level of our conscious personality, giving it attention, giving it energy, giving it emotion, and doing our best to call it in. Whereas miracle making is much more about tapping into a place of love, which is just full of powerful emotion. It's the emotion of that relates to gratitude and inner peace and joy, and that desire to just reach out to another person. It's the energy of compassion. And all of those emotional experiences do really feel good. When we're in them, they feel good. And what they also vibrationally just go out into the world and attract circumstances that match them. And we don't necessarily even need to do a lot of the mental intentioning that goes with a lot of manifesting work, because all of a sudden the outcomes are in God's hands. And things just start to unfold in a way that's often better than we thought. I'll give a great example, because in my experience, miracle making has this element of loving connection that doesn't always happen with manifesting. And an example of this would be there was a woman who attended one of my events, and it was just an evening event, and she came with the intention of finishing a book that she'd been working on. And she left feeling a lot of energy, that she was all abuzz. And several days later, something did happen. Her sister called her, and her sister had won the lottery and had decided to share it with her sister. And so that experience allowed her to quit her job and devote herself full-time to her book. But what she said about that experience is that the real miracle wasn't the money. It was that it came from her sister, because they had such such a strained relationship. She just couldn't believe that her sister was the vehicle
would
through which
that,
all of this money was coming. And what I found in miracle-making work that is, for example, in my book, Making Miracles, I set the whole thing up as an experiment that turns readers into participants in a miracle-making experiment as soon as they begin reading, the idea being that all the readers are invited to reach beyond time and space and reach out in loving compassion to other readers and to become this virtual support group of love. And in doing that, there's a way that we tap into something greater that does allow our highest heart's desires to unfold and our healing to happen. But there's this other layer to it where we start to feel less alone. We feel connected. And we start to see things happening in our lives that were more than we even imagined asking for.
Yeah, I think it's important, too, when you're in this work, not to have real specific categorized, things you're asking for. The example of the woman and her sister is a good one, and I'll add to that with something that happened in our clinic. I was doing a healing on a woman. I think she'd traveled halfway across the country because she had chronic pain. She had a bunch of different medical problems. So basically, she had a chronic pain condition that I was guided to do a healing on her, and she asked me, would her pain go away? And I said, well, I don't know about that. I said, but probably something will happen in your life. You'll just have to let me know what it is. And so she called me a week later and said that her sister, who she'd been estranged, you know, in a bad relationship with for years, called her and they had made up.
Aww.
So healing relationships can occur with, you know, that may be the most important thing on the list. You know, you don't know what the list is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we don't know what is consciously anyway. We usually don't know what's right ahead of us. We don't know if the miracle that came forth, you know, caused us to avoid a very serious car accident we were headed toward, or, you know, it's healing a significant relationship in our life. So, you know, so essentially not having things locked in, I want A, B, C, and D, is important in this. You have to let spirit guide what is the most important, because I don't think of ourselves, we always know what's most important.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that story that you told, because sometimes when relationships heal, that's the most supportive thing that can actually ultimately directly affect our physical illness. Sometimes the path is not what we would expect, because that loving connection, when it's not there, it can create all kinds of stress. And, you know, I think it was Dean Ornish years ago wrote a great book called Love and Survival, where he mm-hmm. just compiled all the research that's been done over decades showing the powerful effect that all kinds of love have on the healing process.
Yeah, it's very true. And the thing that's weird about the story I just told is that's really the only time I can remember that somebody asked me if something would definitely go away with the healing.
Hmm.
And so she was guided to ask that question, because evidently her pain wasn't going to go away, at least not right then. But something else that she may never have relayed back to the healing was going to occur, but that was actually due to the loving energy that was coming in as healing energy.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was interesting that she even asked about that, isn't it?
Very interesting. And, you know, it'd be interesting to just track what happens to her pain down the road. So I remember a woman
who
came to some healing services that I led, and she had chronic pain too. And after the first one, she came back a month later and shared that after the first one, her pain hadn't changed at all, but she just became happy. She just left really happy. And what happened is that her pain remained, but it just took a back burner. And all of a sudden, she was mm-hmm. able to experience life in a whole new way and participate more in life. And after a couple of months of just life feeling so different, she also then started noticing she wasn't having pain anymore. So,
yeah.
You know, I think
well,
we always... We get healing in the way that we can best assimilate it. I'm sure you found that, too, as a healer.
There may actually be layers, too. You know, they talk about peeling the layers off the onion. It may be necessary to heal the relationship before you start on something else. You know, there are connections that we don't know, energetic connections that we probably have not yet characterized. Going into the future, going into the past, maybe going into parallel worlds, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe unraveling that is something that we'll find out about later, you know, when we're better at accessing information than we are right now.
Yeah.
I mean, there may be a technical component to this we don't understand, is what I'm saying, you know. And that's why I said we have to let all possibilities in. When we're doing this work, because we really don't know how it works. We're beginning to get some understanding because of some of the experiments that have been done. Would you like to talk a little bit about some of the experiments that were done showing that things in the present may affect the past? I thought that was an interesting...
There's a number of different streams of research now. Showing that intention is not just very powerfully creative in the present. You know, in other words, a lot of the experimentation has been using random event generators and that sort of thing, with an operator directing intent to see if the random patterning will change. And that shows a definite correlation. But some of these researchers have begun to do experiments where they see if intention now can have an effect on data that was collected in the past and not observed mm-hmm. yet. And sure enough, they're seeing those connections. And there have been some interesting experiments with healing that also show that healing sent in the present to illnesses that were, you know, that the people or animals had in the past, there seems to be a definite effect. And there's a great science writer of your audience, much of your audience has probably heard of, Lynn McTaggart. And she writes
She's been
on
the show several times.
Yeah, she writes pure science, but it reads like metaphysics. And I remember reading one of her books, I think it was The Intention Experiment. She was talking about all this stuff and some of her conclusions. It almost felt like she was boggling her own mind because she was saying, well, according to science, if every thought we have affects our present and our past and our future, well, then what does that mean?
Watch your thoughts.
It is very mind-boggling.
Yeah,
and you know, a lot of New Thought teachings, I think, have gone a little out of date because even though they address the most nonlinear topics, they're still taught in very linear terms. And things like the law of attraction, you know, by its very nature, just defies linear processing because it literally removes steps from the path. However, the way it's usually taught is really still in the confines of time as a line, which we now know really doesn't exist, and cause and effect. You know, you hold an intention, and then you see a result. But when you start to imagine outside of time, we can receive a result now that we haven't changed our consciousness first to receive, and that result in the moment takes us into a future where we have the consciousness that we then send back to the past. I mean, just a really simple example of this, someone who read my book shared with me a story where he woke up in the morning with a very severe sore throat, so bad that he had to make a doctor's appointment for that afternoon. And then mid-afternoon, his sore throat just poof, went away completely. So he canceled his appointment and went about his day. The next morning he woke up and he had a touch of it back, so he sat down to meditate. And he just picked up my book because it was lying near his meditation area, opened it up randomly just to focus his meditation. And he wasn't surprised that he opened right to the chapter that was about healing a condition at its start, because he was used to synchronicity like that. But what did really boggle his mind was when he got to the part of the exercise that guided him to send healing back to himself to 2 p.m. in the past. And the exercise was actually to send it back to every 2 p.m. he's ever experienced.
Right.
But he realized that, 2 p.m., that was exactly when my sore throat went away. So, you know, I like that example because it's so simple and clear. But who knows how, once we start doing this work outside of time, who knows what we've already shifted? It gets very
That's very true.
Mind extending.
So if any of the listeners have a medical condition that there has been particularly stubborn, there is a great exercise in making miracles that Lynn just outlined briefly, but. I think it's a great concept of going back to the beginning of the disease and handling it then. That's really a brilliant way to do it.
Yeah, because, you know, if you think of of an illness right at that moment. In fact, there's a psychologist, William Brown, I think his name is, who's done quite a bit of work with living organisms and intention. And he suggests the idea of seed moments, where we shift from healthy to ill, or where we shift in some significant way. And what if we could aim intention back to those moments? At the very least, sending healing to an illness at its very beginning would seem to be a much easier fix than trying to heal something in a more advanced state. Although even that way of thinking is still bound in some linear processing, because, you know, with God, there is no magnitude of miracles.
I had often wondered, you know, you've heard of spontaneous remission.
Yeah.
Noetic Science has a book of 100 documented spontaneous remissions, and there was a theory that was put forth by one of the teachers that spontaneous remissions might actually be trading places with a future self that is totally healthy, because it happens instantaneously, usually, mm-hmm. or at least a lot of the ones that are documented. Like within minutes, metastatic cancer just goes away. You know, the patient might be riddled with metastatic disease, and then 5 minutes later, there's none.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this sort of confounds the idea of, you know, something not happening in time. I think that since we know things can happen forward or backward in time, we need to at least consider that spontaneous remission might be something along these lines.
Yeah, it could be. That's interesting.
But it certainly is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Do you have any opinions about that, or have you seen a spontaneous remission?
Well, yeah, I have seen a number of spontaneous healings. And in terms of how that relates to time, I haven't a clue. You know, that's why I think of this work as just being big experiments, because, you know, who knows? I think mm-hmm. that the more we expand our thinking, the more we allow to happen. Now, my own experiences of spontaneous healings of various sorts, they come in these moments of spiritual energy. And
right.
I've often seen them happen more frequently in group experiences. In fact, a healer I worked with for some years, who is really world-known, Dr. Willard Fuller, for dental healing along with all kinds of healings, he noted that.
Mm-hmm.
He saw people have, that there was a higher percentage of healings, that people just seemed to heal quicker and more easily in a gigantic healing service where they only got like a second of his actual touch than in all
right.
of his one-on-one sessions where they got an hour of his undivided attention. So I think there's a real amplifying effect that happens in group work. And, I love the idea of time being an element. I'm going to ponder that. It's given me something to chew
mm-hmm.
on.
Several of the people I know, some patients, some friends, have had spontaneous remissions. One was in my meditation group. She was 36, and she was in the hospital and had metastatic disease all throughout her body. And, in fact, it was eroding her gut lining, so that she was on the schedule for surgery. And she was pretty ill, as you can imagine. And she felt a wave of energy start at her crown and go all the way to her feet. And this is common to have this occur. As a wave of energy when we're talking, at least in cancer, metastatic disease.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was over, she had no more metastatic disease. All of her tumors were gone. Because in breast mm-hmm. cancer, a lot of your tumors you can feel because they're more on the chest wall and other places. So the doctor came in, and she said, "I'm hungry," which of course she wouldn't be if she still was had the stomach, the cancer in her stomach that was leaking. So he looked at her, did an exam, and took her hand and said, "This is a miracle," and canceled her surgery. But the idea that, especially in large groups, this is easier is true, other than in her case, is true in the ones I've seen. It's often in a church and during a healing circle or a healing service, or in the case in my office, there were about, I think, 40 or 50 people crowded into an exam room and out into the hall, all sending energy to one patient. That then she experienced that. So, it's very interesting. But I think you're right. I think the more people involved, this is where we often see them. But then, in the case of my friend, she had a miracle occur in her hospital bed, and that often. I mean, I've as a doctor, I've seen that occur too. I've opened somebody up and had a large tumor just not be there, even though it was there a few days before in CAT scan. So, and the person had no idea that it had disappeared, you know. So there are miracles out there, and it's just interesting to, you know, to try to study what is going on that is in common with all of these people.
Yeah, and as soon as you think you've found something that's in common, then somebody comes along who has it completely differently. That's the interesting thing about miracles. There really are just no rhyme or reason. To some extent, I think that we each have our different, I think, readiness and path. And I know that there are times when it seems that people really need to have some spontaneous occurrence because some part of them is ready to have their whole beliefs about reality just shaken to the core and expanded.
Right.
And sometimes, I know a really excellent healer who has healed himself of terminal heart disease and diabetes and, you know, every kind of injury he's ever had, he just boom heals it. He really has a phenomenal success rate on his own body, along with his clients. And he had studied with the late great dental healer, Dr. Willard Fuller, and healed himself of a number of dental conditions. And he decided he was going to grow back a tooth. And so he went into his healing mode. And if anybody could do this, you'd think it would be him. And he actually started to feel a crackling sensation in his jaw, the way you might imagine if you were growing a tooth back spontaneously. And instead of being happy and going with it, his instinctive response was, "No, no," and he stopped it. And it surprised him. And I think that we don't always know the subconscious, I think that there's a way that sometimes things happening too quickly can just pull the rug out from under our whole sense of who we are and our connectedness to reality. And we need to slow it down. So sometimes I think
we do that
healing
all the time.
That are more.
I mean, you know, I had a friend who set the intention to remember all the dreams he had at night.
And did he?
Said, you know. Sometimes what we're asking for is not good for us. We need to slow it down. Maybe remember one or two dreams, the more significant dreams, not every dream we had that night.
Yeah, and you know, there's some forms of healing that happen, like plant growth. You know, if you stare at a plant all day, it doesn't really look like anything's happening. And then you come back a week or two later, and you can see, oh, all the different blooms. And sometimes I think that pace is what we need to be able to assimilate and grow into an experience. And it's just different for different people at different times. And, you know, that's the lovely mystery of it all. We're all so different.
Well, one thing that you keep is emphasized in the various exercises in your book as well as in your text is that the preparation for the state that miracles appear in general, when you're trying to, you know, do it on a more conscious basis, has to do with entering into a state of love rather than fear, and also a vibratory state of certain, type of vibration. Would you like to explain that a little bit and how your exercises get people into that state?
Sure. Well, as I had mentioned, the whole book is set up as a group experiment so that readers, as soon as they begin reading, are invited to bypass space and time, which we know are illusionary, to reach out in loving compassion to other readers, wherever they happen to be in space and time. And then the experiment involves focusing and directing this collective energy of love to see what we can create for ourselves and for each other and for the world beyond. So instead of having a private experience with the content, readers are actually having a spiritual experience with other readers. And so the whole book becomes a giant prayer set in motion on behalf of every reader. And I've had a number of readers share with me that, they've shared with me having all these great manifestations. You know, the new job shows up, the new whatever shows up, very synchronistically. But they've also shared this deeper experience of feeling that there are all of these invisible helpers now with them, and they feel less alone, and they feel the sense of connection. And I think that there's a way that, again, I think that some of the way law of attraction teachings are presented nowadays are a little out of date. And I think one of the ways is that they keep us so locked into our own personal goals and visions and what I want. And I believe that there is such an amplifying effect when we join together for the good of all. I think this is a way that humanity is moving. And so there's an element of the book that really ties our own heart's desires together with reaching out in love and fueling the intentions of every other reader so that we discover through the experience of our own miracles as things manifest for us that reaching out in loving compassion to other people isn't just something selfless we do that's separate from getting what we want for ourselves, that it's actually mm-hmm. the most efficient and direct route for calling in our highest good, that as we stand up for one another and show up for each other, we all have more. And so instead of just going into that place of desire, like I desire what I want and I'm just going to fuel that energy, right. We start with that desire, but then we take it into this higher realm of unconditional love for people we'll never meet, for people who might even be in a different time than us, people in the future, perhaps.
Right. And in the past,
and
that's why
lifts
it's so
us
interesting,
see?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, well, that's great. I was talking over you there. Didn't quite hear you.
So would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Sure. It's lynnwoodland.com. That's LynnWoodland. And my book is Making Miracles, Create New Realities for Your Life and Our World. And it's available on namastepublishing.com. It's available on Amazon. It should be making its way out into bookstores now. It's just coming out. So if you don't see it at your bookstore and you'd like it, go to your favorite bookseller and ask them to get it for you because, you know, we need to support our booksellers these days. And I do a weekly webinar, so if anybody wants to be with me live, it's a Making Miracles webinar. Just check out my website. come join
right.
in.
Right. And you have another book called Power, Effectiveness, and Spirit. Is that right?
I actually let that go out of print a number of years ago and rewrote it
okay.
into what is now my online miracles course.
Okay.
So that's a year-long online study program that leads to ordination.
You talk a lot about Dr. Willard Fuller's work in the book. There's a healer here in Atlanta that does similar work of changing dental, or what we call dental healings. So I've seen this for myself personally and with others. So would you like to mention that for in the last few minutes we have? Because that's interesting.
Sure. I've worked with a few different healers now who have that phenomenon regularly happen in their work. And essentially what happens is in the process of the healing work, people will often see their fillings turn to shiny new gold or silver, or in rare instances, some other substance. And the healers I've worked with, and I actually have had a reader have that experience just by reading my book, Her Fillings Changed. She read the last chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Healers I've worked with call it a healing. I think it's something different. I don't think it is of that reparative energy of healing.
Mm-hmm.
It's about fixing something that's broken. I think it's something that is taking us to a higher consciousness, that's planting something that's opening our mind and planting new ideas and connecting us with a body of knowledge. That's my own personal instinct about it. In the fall, I'm actually going to be doing some live healing webinars with another healer who sees this in his work quite a bit. And we're going to just discuss it and maybe do some healing, let people see for themselves.
Yeah, I think it's more under the realm of alchemy, because you actually change one thing
yep.
to another.
Yep.
So it's more of a physical... But, you know, who knows what happens when healings occur, too. I mean, there might be a kind of alchemy of the body that occurs as well, but this certainly is in the mineral realm, definitely in the mineral realm, and would fit the definition of alchemy.
Yeah, it's the spontaneous creation of gold and silver, absolutely.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a little more accessible to observation than maybe what happens inside if a tumor disappears or, you know.
Yeah.
You can't really see that stuff happening as well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Interesting stuff. Once people have seen that, it's hard to look at reality the same way afterwards, because if gold can spontaneously appear, well, then what's impossible?
Mm-hmm. Well, Sai Baba creates gold all the time. You know, I mean, even things like he created a small cross with Jesus on it, and they carbon dated the wood of the cross back to the time of the crucifixion, or around that time. It's not exact. So, you know, there's all sorts of, if you want to study manifestation, take a look at what Sai Baba did that
yeah.
was documented.
Cause yeah, and I think that these kind,
it's really amazing.
These kind of things are no longer just in the hands of those rare few, you know, just the few miracle
right.
makers. I think we're at a point where they're in the hands of all of us. And I would just
mm-hmm.
love for people to read that last chapter of my book, and when your teeth change, let me know, because I expect to hear some more stories of that. My excitement is in normalizing some of these experiences so that we don't have
mm-hmm.
to go to the one healer on the planet or the one
right.
holy person,
yeah.
but that suddenly we realize, wow, this is in my hands. I am a
right.
miracle maker.
Yeah.
yeah.
And the thing that amazes me more than the actual seeing the fillings turn to gold was experiencing the energy in which that transformation took place, because the energy was tremendously high. That's all
yeah.
I can say.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no question that the energy of the group, because it was a group, it's always a group,
mm-hmm.
the energy of the group, as high as that energy can go, and this healer does it through music as well as mm-hmm. you know, touch, but mostly music to raise the vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
And that energy is what is connected to the miracles. I mean, because I felt it.
Yeah.
And it's,
yeah.
And so you're right. It's tapping into the energy, the group energy, and you did it very, very, in an interesting manner in your book, because you linked all the readers, is key.
Yeah.
So that's,
and I think that linking
that's how we get there. Well, I want to thank you for joining us. We've been interviewing Lynn Woodland. Her book, Making Miracles, Create New Realities for Your Life and Our World, and visit her website as well for her her online programs. Thanks so much for joining us, Lynn. I appreciate you taking the time out to present this to our audience.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. We have Dr. Brad Gould's giving a Millennium Healthcare event, Spring Cleaning for the Body, 7:30, 24 April. Next week, join us for an interview with Patricia Monaghan, Meditation, the Complete Guide, Techniques from East to West to Calm the Mind, Heal the Body, and Enrich the Spirit. Thank you very much for joining us, and come back next week.